be the right club.
Be the right club today.
Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most.
Expect anything different?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the No Laying Up live show, presented as always by our friends at High Noon, designated signature elevated event. Solly here. TJ Pie is here. Hello, Pie Man.
Hello, guys. It is it's Hollywood's biggest night. The PJ Tour stars are back. Just hyped to be with you guys. Good. Let's do it.
Weird to be doing a show with there's daylight outside. We're back on the Florida Swim. We got daylight savings time, all that. Kevin Van Valkenburg is here. Hello, KVV. How are you?
Boys, as the house dad, I'm not drinking tonight. I'm refraining, but I want you to really indulge. Really, as we're going to get good vibes only tonight. I really appreciate you having me as the D&D.
We, of course, are introducing the all-new High Noon Snowbird Pack featuring the perfect mix of winter and summer flavors. The 8-pack features two new flavors, raspberry and plum. Listen, I know it was controversial. Last week, a lot of people upset about a lot of my takes in this past week when I said that raspberry was up into my top three. I'm willing to stand by that, and I will ride for the raspberry flavor. The plum is also fantastic, but immediate addition into the top of the rotation. Alongside the High Noon Classics Peach and Lemon, they're all made with real vodka and real juice. The Snowbird Pack is a winter exclusive. Get it before the ice melts. Track down the nearest pack nearest you at highnoonspirits.com. We're also going to have High Noon live shows Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday this coming week for Players Championship. Also for Players Preview, dropping overnight Monday into Tuesday. We'll have our happy hour show on Wednesday. Probably mostly talking reaction from the Monahan presser, which I think is going to be an interesting thing coming up this week. The show also brought to you by our friends at Titleist, the number one ball in golf and the number one choice of players at every level of competitive golf this week on the PGA Tour, LPGA Tour, DP World Tour, Korn Ferry Tour, and Ladies European Tour. Every winner teed up either a Pro V1 or Pro V1X. They're making it hard for us to stay in our 1 minute time limit here for ads with how many winners the Titleist folks have. Two victories at both Bay Hill and Puerto Rico. Players using a Titleist golf ball now have won 10 of the first 11 events played this season on the PGA Tour. The best players in the world are dialed in with their golf ball choice. And as we've all learned here, going through our own fittings, choosing the right golf ball is all about flight, spin, and feel. Titleist has a choice for every player looking to shoot their lowest scores. Head to Titleist.com, start the golf ball fitting process, and find out which Pro V1 or Pro V1X model is best for your game. Pie Man, big statement from Scotty Scheffler today. What is your reaction?
So I said this in Slack to you guys, and I think I'm going to stand by it. I'm going to throw out the Masters. But other than that, that's up there with as much fun as I've ever had watching Scotty play golf. And a lot of that was because I think he's just gotten so much more interesting because of the putting stuff. Like he was so... You know, there's a lot of these guys when they'll come up and they're like ascending into what turns out to be like their peak golf. You know, they kind of first they're here and then they kind of level up a little bit and they kind of level up a little bit. And eventually it all adds up to being the best player in the world. And you're like, huh, tip your cap. That guy's the best player in the world. Scotty did that. And then once he got there, it was kind of like, oh, no, here's this big, massive, glaring flaw. And we've just been able to watch it and watch it evolve and watch it kind of metastasize in him a little bit. And he gets asked about it every day and he gets a little chippier and a little chippier. And finally, just to like see him break through, it just felt like the cherry on the top of the Sunday of like how good of golf he's been playing, right? Like I don't want to say he deserves to putt well. That's a very stupid thing to say, but like, man, that's what it's supposed to look like. That's what we've been waiting for, was just like mistake-free, complete game shutout, slam the door, leave everybody else in the dust. Like I had a blast watching that today. It was awesome.
But and it's not like this is a Hideki situation where it's like happened for a decade and he's just always been a bad putter. Like 2022, he was this dude today. Like he was dominant. He wasn't quite this level of ball striker, but he could putt really well. Like in that winning streak he had up to winning the Masters, he was a way above average putter. And it just something happened there. Like honestly, somebody brought this up to me this week. The four putt to finish the Masters, like did that do have a psychological damage for him? I don't know. It took, I guess, until Rory recommends to switch to a mallet, even though we've been screaming for him to switch some kind of putter. And maybe it was my putting advice that I gave him on the pod a couple weeks ago. Something clicked for him, obviously.
Great job.
And we will take credit for it here on this show. But it is, there is a level of, I don't know, people don't get super amped about Scotty. Like, people aren't, like, all in. It's not, any kind of, it's not a Spieth effect or anything like that. But I really, really, really enjoy watching dominance and greatness. Like, we've been witnessing greatness with him for a sustained period of time. I mean, truly, that data golf stat that I tweeted out today blew my freaking mind about, like, his 2023 ball striking season is second best to Tiger's 2006, better than all other Tiger years. Like, it's not, usually those records are, it goes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 Tiger, and then somebody sneaks in like one season or something like that. Literally second, no one else has done this except for Tiger Woods, what he's doing. And he sustained it into the first 3 months of the year, and now he's adding putting on top of it. Like, I am swept up in the moment, but this has a chance to get out of hand.
So, you know what I think is interesting about it is Scotty's flaws. Like, if, let's say that's fixed right now, it's probably not totally fixed. There's still going to be some demons that come out. But like with any good storytelling, it's the flaws that make someone like more relatable and more interesting. And so now going forward, if you're like, oh, I saw Scotty like mired in this depth of this, like, how did he not go insane? How did he not just punch a hole in a wall every week? Oh, wait, now he figured it out. That's freaking awesome. The next 6 months could be really fun.
It was coming into today. I was thinking about Smiley Kaufman had tweeted that story about Tiger a couple of I think it was a story he heard a couple years ago, and it was basically like how Tiger measured his rounds, and he had that point system. Did you guys see that about like, you know, if he was trying to avoid points, and a point was like, you know, they were basically like strikes, and it was like you don't get up and down from an easy spot, you miss on the wrong side, you do all these things. And coming into today, I sat down on the couch and was like, all right, I'm going to try to like frame Scotty's round here a little bit. I'm going to use this like point system of, you know, whenever just to like lean into the TV a little bit more whenever he hits it in one of these spots. And he just didn't have any points. You know, he just like did everything exactly what he needed to do. And it was, you know, a couple weird shots on those par threes where he came up way short. But even those, it was like, stay calm, you know, get the next hitter, like just stick to the game plan, get it, knock it up there and make the 6-footer. And seeing him do that was just, man, we've been missing it, man. We needed it. You need to have a big, like the baddest guy in the yard. You got to have like that kind of thing going into these weeks, because it just means so much more if somebody takes him down, or, you know, you got to have somebody firing on all cylinders.
It is worth pointing out again. This is the hardest era. Every single year, it's only going to get harder and harder. This is the hardest era ever in golf to separate yourself from the pack from a ball striking perspective in this technological era. Like, it just is. Like, the forgiveness of misses and how far the golf ball goes, it's harder and harder and harder to do it. And he's managed to do this. Get this for the week. He led the field in strokes gained off the tee. He led the field in strokes gained tee to green. He led the field in strokes gained around the green. He led the field today in strokes gained putting and was fifth in putting for the week. Truly,
that's as close as you can get to a perfect game without throwing one on me, right? Like,
yeah. You're muted, I think, Pie Man. I don't know what happened here.
Sorry. Speaking of perfect games, this might be the spot to slot in a shout out to our guy Randy on the preview. We did the who's going to win, who's going to finish last, and Randy had Scotty to win, amateur David Ford to finish last. I think he just missed it by one place. I think David Ford finished one spot from DFL, but very nearly a perfect game. Like, 2 outs, 8 2/3. Randy gives up a home run there with David Ford, but
still
really
gets a standing O, Randy.
That's right.
You know what?
I mean, really appreciate the effort.
Absolutely, he does not, because in his mind, runner-ups don't get anything for any tournament ever, so he does not. getting this close gets him absolutely nothing. I like guys that win, Randy. Sorry. I like guys that win. Not really, not even close. Does this change anything for you guys heading into the Masters? Like, are heading into this major championship season, does this change anything for what you are expecting to happen?
Yeah, dude. Right?
Of course.
Like, hell yeah, it changes things. I don't know. I know it's one week, and I know, weirdly, I feel like this happens at Bay Hill. Remember when this happened to Rory at Bay Hill, where he was like really struggling with his putting and won, you know, got that facts and lesson and came in and won Bay Hill by a million because he just made like 8,000 feet of putts. Maybe there's something about the greens there. I reserve the right to be wrong about that, but like, nothing about that looked fluky, man. Like, that looked like a different it wasn't just that the balls, you know, like you said, so it's not like they were hitting lips and we're just going to keep doing the same thing over and over and over. Like, that was a different dude. It was a different putter. It was a different stance. It was a different posture. It was like, I know there's probably a honeymoon period, but I think that's the thing with Scotty that we've always said is like, man, if you just get it to average, it's going to be not a fair fight. And let alone like way above average is would be scary. So to me, it's like, yeah, if you can ride this feel for, you know, another month, it's like Masters might not be all that close.
There was a couple of those on the back nines where he hit it to 30 feet, whatever, because it's a Bay Hill. That's what you have to do on some. And like, there was a little twinge in the back of my mind. It was like, oh shit, like this would be a hard two putt. And then he would just die it to 2 feet. And I was like, where's this dude been? Like, yeah. He didn't give himself any easy stuff like that for 5 months. You know, he, and the hard ones, when the long lag putts, he was always stressing over them. And then he was like stressed and pissed off about the 8 footers. Man, this was just a whole different feel.
Well, it is. There's something to, if there was a way to visually see what it looks like when you're not fearing the 3 footer, it was that today, right? You end up hitting better lags, better putts at the hole from a distance, you know, just not fearing the comebacker. And I don't know, man. Even the ones that he was not making just were way better putts. And something happened Saturday. He had a putt on Saturday on the 11th green where he missed it woefully short, never got it to the hole. And he had one of his biggest freakouts yet. I mean, he yelled at himself like, I forget what the exact quote was, something along the lines of like, you got to give yourself a chance. He started yelling at Ted, but I think he was yelling at himself. He was like, I'm so tired of, and you couldn't, of course, they cut to commercial immediately after that and never followed up on it.
Spiethian right there. Yeah. But yelling at yourself, but directed at someone else.
They never followed up on what he actually said, but from that moment on, he became a totally different person. And if I was everyone else on tour, I'd be a little nervous right now.
It might be like Randy hucking that club at Bandon Dunes. You know, you just got to flush the system, and then eventually, then you get freed up, and you know, you go on to win the season.
So this may, I'm curious on this next question.
It might not be, too. We'll see.
Do you think Scotty gets at least one of the Players or the Masters?
I think the harder the course is, and this is going to, we're going to talk about this the second we draft, the better he is and the easier it is for him to separate. So yes, I think he wins one of these two for sure. Now, I don't know how hard the Players are going to be set up next week. You Florida boys are going to have to give us an on the ground report about whether it's going to be firm or fast, but if it's firm, then yes.
I'd be stunned if it is. It's been a wet winter here and it absolutely dumped last night. So, and I'm 10 miles, not even 10 miles down the road from TPC Sawgrass. So
I think what's weird about that question, Solly, is like, it's weird to see Scotty going so dramatically up and to the right and all the other stars kind of petering a little bit, you know, other than, I guess, Wyndham Clark and Zalatoris and Hideki. Other than that, it's like Rory's got all these big, you know, just weird brain farts coming out of nowhere that lead to, you know, just really miserable performances. Hovland went 75-75 this weekend. Morikawa missed the cut. Like, it's weird to think one of those guys is just going to, like, find it. It's weird to think Scotty's going to drop off from what we just saw. And, you know what I mean? Like, those two things are going to switch places. Like, Scotty's going to drop off and somebody else is going to find it. To the degree that that would need to happen.
At the same time, golf's so weird. I mean, look at what Phil shot in the first round this week and what Scotty did this week. And Phil beat Scotty at the Masters last year and almost won them. I don't know. Weird shit can happen. And, like, odds would be that he would not win one of these two. Like, you would get positive odds, you know, if you were wagering on this. Like, he's plus 750, I think, to win the Masters right now. I don't know what his most recent players' odds are, but I think he's going to get at least one of them. I would bet on that, even if, like, the odds tell me it's not going to happen.
Yeah, for sure. You could talk me, if I had a couple more of these high noons, you could talk me into betting that he's going to win both of them, honestly, based on what we just saw. And I think that was a different performance than we see week to week.
I think it's a lightning bolt thrown at, like, Koepka and Rom. So that's, they're the people who are probably like, yeah, we're ready for major season. Like, we've been playing well. And now Scotty's like, you know what? I'd like to join that conversation. Please add me to that chat.
CC Scotty.
Wow.
Scotty's email.
KV shots fired at Neiman, the best player in the world right now.
I was going to say, Taylor Gooch also wasn't in the field this week. It was a whole other asterisk. But.
You want to go to our draft then next? Is that, are we there yet?
Sure.
Yeah, let's do it.
Why don't you kick us off, Deej? Tell us what we're doing.
Well, we're just looking for, I think we're going to go around. No real formalities here, but I think we're just going to go around and draft, quote unquote, draft kind of just a roundtable selection. But what do we want us to call it? Favorite story of the week?
I think just favorite things of the week.
Favorite thing of the week.
Yeah.
All right. I just am running the simulations. KVV's got first pick. I've got second pick. Solly's got last pick because he accidentally took first pick in our fantasy baseball draft. Oh, so you can go last.
I don't want it. I'm so mad about that.
Why?
I don't want number one overall. Yeah, I don't want that.
Just take Ohtani and run, man.
No way.
Whether he's going to pitch or not.
Ohtani.
Okay, we'll get to that offline. Whatever. All right. With the number one pick in our stupid Sunday draft, I would like to pick Bay Hill. I have been out on Bay Hill for a long time. You know what? I feel like I got a little bit too woke, a little bit too deep in the architecture blogs, a little bit in the bullshit. And I came around on this week. I'm like, you know what? This course tests these dudes. They, for whatever reason, they are not afraid to make it firm. They are not afraid to grow the rough up to a point where it would normally piss off the players. I don't think it's a great design. Robert Dameron came at me on Twitter about this saying, how dare I say such a thing? But I think it's a fun course for pros to play. Do I think I could play it and have any fun? No. Do I think I could break 100? No. Do I think that would make a good film room? Maybe. But I think Bay Hill is like, I'm deciding it's sick. Like, yeah, I know the holes enough now after all these years. I'm anticipating certain things. I'm in on Bay Hill. I'm telling the populace to wrap their arms around me and basically let me be part of their tribe.
You know what? I'm kind of with you, man, in that, like, if we are where we are in pro golf, the golf ball goes a long ways. There's very few ways to test these guys. I think, like, that's what it's going to look like week to week. You know, like, do I wish they went to Seminole instead of Bay Hill? Definitely. But, like, do I think that's going to happen? No. Right. And so if that's what we're going to get, then I think that's a fun experience. What I would push back on, I guess, is I think that's a fun experience, like, with the right field. Right. Like, if you get, you know, a bad field playing that golf course, like, it's probably not quite as fun. It was really fun that it was Scottie Scheffler and Will Zalatoris. And I guess what I'm getting at was, like, I almost said this to you guys too, but, like, seeing Scottie play, like, seeing Scottie do what he did this week, like, makes all the other players just, like, look so bad. At sure. the, you know what I mean? Like, it's watching
the
those guys.
Mark
just,
Ingram
like,
meme. Like, the, yeah.
Yeah, watching those guys just like miss putts and miss greens and hit bad chips. And I'm like, oh, Scotty's not doing any of this stuff. Can't be that hard. It's like, oh, no, that's because he's just separating himself so much.
I'm going to push back on your pushback, Deej, though, because I would like to wipe the slate clean on and start over a total reset of the system on what is a good player and what is not. Because there's a lot of people who've been talking a lot of shit about how, oh, we should just narrow the field to 40 dudes. Okay, well, like, how about some of those dudes start winning some freaking tournaments? How about they step up and show themselves? Because I've been seeing a lot of guys who started the year outside the top 300 who were winning tournaments, and all of a sudden they're not doing shit. So, like, if we're going to start be cutting down the field, I would like to know, like, who are we taking? Are we taking famous guys? Because that sounds like another league that I've been hearing a lot about that we've been talking a lot of shit about for a long time, like that reputation. You know what? Like, let's just reset the clock here and say, like, all right, if a good field might be like dudes who are just playing good.
Yeah. It's interesting, man. I think there's like, I was thinking about this a lot this weekend, and I think it's a good example of how, I don't know the word, like, it's not fleeting, but like all the players for the most part are like so close together, and those stretches of really great play just are, they're so few and far between.
They don't last.
They don't last. And that's where it is really hard to just say, like, nope, these are the 30 guys. These are the 40 guys. Cause it's like really hard for those 40 guys to all consistently play well. But I also agree with what you're saying. It's just hard. It's a hard problem to solve, which is where I kind of get to the 100 number that a couple people have thrown out.
It's
Kendall Roy, Rory, Wyndham Clark.
It's hard though for the, like, this group that is supposed to be these top guys to have shat the bed this hard early on in the season, like to play this bad. People came at me because, like, oh, look at the leaderboard. Like, look at the leaderboard. Are you forgetting your take about everybody's bad plays? Like, literally go down the PIP list, like the list from last year of the most influential and powerful and marketable people in the game, and like go one by one as to their results so far for this year. And it's a bleak situation, literally, except for Scottie and Wyndham Clark. It really is. There's like Rory, stinky. Tiger Woods, Sam's going to play once a month, and we're not even going to get three starts. You know, John Rahm went to live. Jordan Spieth, relatively stinky, stunk at two of the three signature events. Scottie, obviously the lone stud. Ricky Fowler been stinky. Victor Hovland has regressed greatly. JT, a solid bounce back from a bad year, but like still hasn't really threatened to win. Tommy Fleetwood's been very meh on the PGA Tour. Max, definitely not his best to start off the year. Xander, T4 Pebble, not much else. Jay Day, he's had three top tens of signature events. I'll give him that. Morikawa, T5 at Century, and then he missed the cut on an event. It's like really hard to miss the cut this week. Fitz has been stinky. Wyndham obviously won Pebble. Cam Young done almost nothing. Justin Rose hasn't done much. Cantlay T4 at Genesis, but he shat the bed on the weekend. And Brian Harman's done nothing so far. So those are your pip guys from last year. So like, it is something to say of like, yeah, there has been some quite shitty. I don't know how we got there off of your Bay Hill take.
I think it's all kind of related because yeah. I think like we're talking in general about who should be playing in these signature events. And, you know, I just feel like I think we can do a better job. And this, I mean, the larger golf media, but also like us, of telling the stories of the guys who are not yet established or whatever. Because if you're famous and you're playing shitty golf, I might want to see the famous people. It's the Tiger conundrum. I don't care how everyone else is doing. I still want to see what Tiger's doing. I still want to see what Rory's doing. Yeah, but you know what? Like, there's some other people who are actually playing good golf over here. And I feel like maybe they should deserve the opportunity to be widely known and become famous too, instead of us just being like, you know, it's kind of frustrating. It's a one-off. Like if Jake Knapp turns into like freaking Kurt Warner, I mean, I covered the NFL for a long time. Sometimes like Cinderella stories like pop up out of nowhere and that dude becomes like really good. Do I think Jake Knapp's going to be like a great player? I don't know. Probably not. But if he is, then I think we ought to keep sort of thinking like, yeah, man, Jake Knapp might be appointment TV. And every time he comes on, he's good.
But isn't that in place? Like what? If you play good, like Jake Knapp literally played his way into the tournament. Like you play good in these other events, you play your way into these tournaments. Who's left out of these tournaments that is like potential to be a Hall of Famer right now?
Gooch. This is a Gooch conundrum. Like, I'm just saying, like when we say like, it's frustrating. Like none of these guys are playing good. I'm also like, yeah, but you know what? There's a bunch of guys at the top of the leaderboard who are playing pretty good. Like I'm interested in that. Does it draw the casual fan in if Victor Hovland, Justin Thomas, those guys, Spieth, aren't playing well? No, it probably doesn't. And that's a different argument. That's why I don't think any of this is worth billions of dollars. But from like a golf fan's perspective, yeah, like I'm interested in Austin Eckroat or whatever. I didn't know shit about him before last week. And like, I want to know more about him now. And I want to sort of follow his career going forward and say like, maybe that wasn't a one-off. Maybe he's the next dude. Maybe he's the next star. I remember when Justin Thomas was just like a unknown kind of guy, or Spieth was an unknown kind of guy. And I think maybe that some of those guys are sort of bubbling around the surface, and we're sort more focused on the famous guys than we are like who might be the next thing, because the famous guys are kind of fat and not really kicking much ass lately. I gotta say, to the start of this year, they're content with their money.
Can relate to that.
And I hope that the hungry guys are ready to kick some ass, because I want to see their you know, their lunch money get snatched if they're not playing. You know, they're not going to come out and win.
Two things. Largely agree with everything you're saying. One, I think there needs to be a distinction in, like, there's two different classes, or not classes, but like categories of fans that I think you're talking about in this conversation, where like Austin Eckroat's the, like, that kind of like next tier of guys. Like, we want to know those stories. We want to follow those guys week to week. I think though, that's a pretty small number of like hardcore fans that are going to feel that way. And I would firmly say that I'm in that camp, and I do need to learn more about both of those guys. And probably everybody who listens to this podcast is in that camp and needs to learn more about those guys too. But I think there's just so many more people outside of that camp who are like, I just kind of want to watch. I've only got room in my brain for seven golfers, and that's about all I'm going to really care about. And even those are like outside of the majors, it's going to be really hard to sell me on, you know, kind of like the next level, you know, the next shelf down of the high end liquors.
So I'd say like Wyndham Clark is the case here, right? He is the guy that has risen up from this kind of very big collective group of people and like consistently proven himself, right? And it was, you know, he won the Wells Fargo last year, and I was like, oh, whoa, like that's a little bit of a surprise here. And then when he wins the U.S. Open, it just becomes you're a whole different person now at this point. And I think, like, yeah, if Jake Knapp would have stepped up and won this week instead of, I think he made a 12, I think, at this point.
Which brings me to my point number two real quick. And I said this to you guys, and I'm not saying that this is the Jake Knapp problem by any means, but I'm just flagging it going forward. Is as we get into the Aeon Swing 5 and the next 10 and all of these, like, you can play your way in type of things, it is really weird. Like, that's where I think we get into a golf course problem on the PGA Tour. I was thinking about this with Bay Hill, where it's like, okay, see, we have all these feeder events to like identify who's getting into Bay Hill. And like, with the exception of like Justin Lauer, who played really well this week, I feel like when you have all those kind of like lower tier, quote unquote, PGA Tour events on like shittier golf courses that are almost more like Korn Ferry Tour golf courses, and then you have these designated events that are really like building their identity as, we're going to be really tough tests, we're going to really separate the good from the bad, we're going to firm it up, we're going to grow up the rough. It just seems like those two things are at odds with each other, where you're like promoting the Jake Knapps of the world who are getting through almost like, I don't want to say shittier events, but kind
shittier
of
events.
Into like these events that like maybe they're not totally suited for or ready for. Again, I'm not using this as like a one-off example, but I'm just saying watch this space.
Also, the entire Korn Ferry Tour.
That's kind of what I was going to say. Who was the last like great, great, great Korn Ferry guy that was like, I dominated at this level and then I came, you know what I mean? Like there's exceptions, and Scotty would be an exception.
I think something what I'm asking though is for the stars to like read the room, man. It's like all these guys are saying like, hey, whoa, you know, we should really have like fewer guys in these fields. All right, well then you guys should like step up and win instead of making it look like you're just trying to sort of, you know, decrease the chances of like people who might be able to have a career week and overtake you. Like if Rory and Scotty and, you know, JT and Victor were dominating every week and had come out and won like Rom did, like three of the four tournaments to start the year, I'd been like, yeah, like, you know, I'd really like to see the big Titans clash all the time. But they've just been kind of playing middling golf. And then for them to say like, ah, you know, we need fewer people out here because like really it should be the stars. You know, I'm not saying I disagree with the logic. I'm saying you sound like a fucking idiot.
Well,
but it's a contract year and you're just laying an egg.
We're conflating two things here, though. They're talking about 100 players on tour, right? And we're not talking about like these 69 person events and making those fields smaller, like, right? It's not like they're playing bad in these and being like, oh, there should be less people here, so I have a better chance of winning them. It's like cutting off. There's a cutoff at some point of where the PGA Tour is. I don't think anyone here would sit here and say it should be 200, right? Like it's a massive amount of people on there. And I think it's a logical take. Also, to this, Wyndham Clark was one of the people that has been saying this past week. He has won the most recent signature event before this one and finished second in these. So I think he qualifies to stand up and say, you know, if this 100 players is the cutoff, then
but how did Wyndham Clark get those opportunities? Like what was the field in Quail when he got in, when he was 300th in the world or whatever? I mean, I don't think that he would have been in that field. You could probably fact check that, but I don't think that Wyndham Clark would have been given as many of those opportunities. That was a sort of we didn't have high level events quite exactly then, but that was a thought of certainly as a higher tier event when he won that. So anyway, I think this is an excellent first round pick because it gave us all kinds of stuff to discuss.
You can't have it both ways though. I understand. They do need to play better, which I understand. They definitely do. But you also, you've been begging for these people to have ownership of their tour and to get up there and answer the questions that people ask them.
Totally.
And if you want them to lie to you or they want you to not withhold what they actually feel, we can play that game too. Now, does it sound silly at the face of it? Sure, but Wyndham 100%, like he's top 10 player in the world right now. Why would he not want to say that? And if that's what he truly feels. Now, it could be a lot different if Wyndham from early last year wasn't that didn't have that same train of thought. Who knows? But I know right now, like the people that you're begging to say, We have two people in a playoff right now in Puerto Rico. Do you know who they are?
I forgot that was an event until Sully said it on the front end. I'm furiously Googling.
They're on the fourth hole of a playoff right now. And what both of them are like ranked 500 in the world, OWGR, who knows what, FedEx Cup, what data. But
Kev, we can let you out to go watch that if you want.
That should be my job as a reporter to learn their stories, frankly. But I would say, Cody.
Cody. I was jumping on that. What'd you say the win gets?
The win gets into the fucking players, you know, and it gets them 2 years of their cards. Now, do they deserve 2 years for winning the Puerto Rico? Probably not, but it's a win, and winning's really fucking hard.
I've seen, really hard. Though, in how in the NFL, like decreasing the number of roster spots, decreasing the number of like veterans who are sort of available, basically saying, well, we want to protect our people. We want to have like rookie contracts that makes the product shittier. Like the product is at its best when there's constantly people pushing you from the bottom and people aren't living like a fat life. They're kind of have to stay hungry all the time. And I think that's actually what the tour was kind of built on for a long time. It was like, you know what? Like if I miss a cut this week, I'm kind of fucked. Like I'm financially taking a hit. I got to go out there when I'm trunk slamming and go to the next city and figure it out. And I don't want to lose that sort of edge to what it means to play high pro level golf.
Like, and you know,
there should be a dogfight all the time to hold on to those spots at the bottom.
I would maintain that still totally exists. The system is, it is, you know, there's four sponsors exemptions, whatever that is, but ignoring that, everyone else is qualified to get that spot. You had to play the golf to get in the top 50 last year to be in all the events this year, right? They're expecting 40%. So far, it would look like 40% turnover in that. 18 of those guys would have dropped out. The top 32 of those top 50 from last year are going to get back into the designated events from last year. Otherwise, you can play in through top 50 or top 30 in the OWGR, or you can play in through the Swing Five. Like, you play good enough golf. Like, there's no one playing fantastic golf that is shut out of these events that I'm looking at like, oh, man, that's all the talent in the world that's sitting on the sidelines right now. I think it's like, it can be conflated as this, the PIP guys didn't get automatic bids into these events, right? It, straight up, your golf scores is what got you into these events, aside from the sponsors exemptions, which I'd be totally fine going away from. I understand why they exist. If you're asking companies to put up $25 million to put on their tournaments, they're going to want to select a few players for the field, whatever. That's a reality of pro golf that I don't love, but just you have to put up with. But I do not think that there is like a next star that doesn't get into these events as of right now. And I think if there is one, 60, they're gonna play golf.
69 is a good number for like the, for a signature event. Like you feel comfortable with that, right?
I think they should move. Like, so how it has worked is, you know, the, if you're already qualified and you're in the Aeon Swing Five, you qualified through a win and you're in the Aeon Swing Five, they don't go down the list. I think they'd be totally fine going down the list to get somewhere in the 70 to 80 range, right? I think an important part of this structure is getting everyone off the first tee on the first tee for Thursday and Friday, not split starting after morning and afternoon on both sides. That's the idea of this like structure of golf tournament is like, look, we just are not bringing much added value to this tournament past 80 people. I strongly, strongly believe that. I really don't think there's a ton of value brought past that. There's got to be a cutoff at some point. The number is 156 because that is how much daylight allows for. Like, I do not know why the goal of, if you're trying to create the best product, would be to get the maximum amount of players on the golf course all at once. And that's what they've decided to do. And I think they're in a decent spot with it. I don't think it's perfect. I like the cut a little bit in some of these events. I think it's totally fine to send guys that have played absolutely horrific home. But I don't know. I do not think that we're sitting there looking and not having the top stars not be able to break through with good golf on the golf course.
All right, the commissioner is informing me that we went way over time for the Baltimore draft pick. So now it is the second pick in the draft, Mr. Pajowski.
Well, that's great because mine is totally related to all this.
I didn't get to do my Bay Hill part. But I'll save that for later.
Last minute swap. I was going to pick something else, but I'm moving this up my board just so I don't lose it. Favorite thing I saw this week, totally not going to ever happen. Wildly ridiculous idea, but I'm totally into it, was Randy's idea that if you miss the cut at one of these 69 player signature events, you're not eligible for the next signature event. I'm truly that. In on that. Colin Morikawa, if you want to go shoot 80
snakes, baby,
sounds good, man. You miss the next one, and you know that's going to put you behind the eight ball. Now you're going to have to play a little better. We welcome you into the you know, the Aeon Swing Five if you want to go play Zurich or, you know, some of these Texas events or whatever. I'm in on that. I think that would be sick. Sammy Vellamaki, get him out of here. Rosie, see ya.
But they won't be able to set their schedule. They won't be able to get daycare.
Man. Tough shit. I don't know what to tell you. I'm in on that. That's just the kind of chaos I'm looking for.
No, I love that idea.
I'm going to take Will Zalatoris here.
I knew I was going to lose it. Yeah. That was what was on my board.
He kind of has a bit of a lacking PGA Tour resume to this point. He just doesn't seem to do a lot very well at these, quote, piece of shit fucking putting contests, as John Rahm would say. And want to have him coming back and swinging the way that he is, change the swing, one, recovering from a back surgery, two, hitting the ball this good, this fast. I mean, he really did not get much out of his golf this past weekend. He was playing just fantastic, obviously, up until I had to tweet about it on Saturday after staying so, so fucking silent for so many hours while watching that golf. I just had to say something, totally put the cooler on him. To have the putting figured out, I know that there was some replays of some of the short putts and all the, oh, he's back, here we go again. His putting numbers look fantastic this week. I think he's a massive, massive talent. I think the harder the golf, the better he gets. And to see him kind of playing better. I know this is a harder golf course, you know, on the PGA Tour, but to see him playing better on like PGA Tour golf courses and not just being like a Brooks Koepka who just peaks at the majors, I'm stoked for Will Zalatoris's major championship season this year, because I still think he's going to win one of these. I don't know if I need to change that prediction after what we just saw from Scotty, if he's going to win the Grand Slam, but I'm just very, very stoked for Zalatoris. And I love watching that dude play. And I can't really explain it. He's not the most dynamic personality, but love his playing style, love watching his golf swing, and he's just an interesting dude to watch.
Do you trust him, Solly, over like a 3-footer? I was all in until I saw like a real decel on like a, you know, 6-inch breaking putt on like a 3-footer on Saturday. I was like, ooh, I don't know, man. It reminded me of the ghost of Willie's past.
He putted well this week, man.
He did. Cody just pulled up the Paolo Uggetti story from ESPN this week. I don't know if you guys saw that or not, but kind of a deep dive into Willie Z's comeback and what he went through and what he went into and how he rebuilt his swing. Just really good details in there. People should definitely go read that. It was really good, just because at least myself, I think I was like totally underselling kind of what he's been through the last couple years. I think with all the PIF stuff, all the live stuff, all the pro golf kind of falling apart and shitting down its leg stuff, I think it was hard to like take a deep dive into, you know, Willie Z's rehab. And Paolo kind of like got his arms around all of it and spelled out exactly what was going on. And I just really enjoyed that piece, because like, what is he, 26, 25? And he's like basically rebuilding his golf swing. So not only was he like one of the foremost flushers on planet Earth, like now he's got to become one of the foremost flushers again, kind of with like a new golf swing to try to take pressure off of his back. And he's changing his putting. He went to the broomstick instead of the arm lock putter. It's just, there's a lot of good details in there. And I'm with you, Solly. Long live Willie Z.
27 and a half. So he was an older, he's a Ludwig. He's on the Ludwig.
He's up there with Ludwig. Yeah. all right. Top of the order.
Yeah. My number two pick was going to be Rory just absolutely obliterating a tee box. Sally kind of mentioned it in the thing. He gets my best supporting actor award for, you know, didn't necessarily going to, you know, win the big prize, but showing some emotion, showing that he kind of gives a shit. It was nice to see that he had a couple
of what they call Oscar moments. You know, yeah. he was his back 930 yesterday, blowing up the tee box. That's kind of like, man, who was that? Who was that guy? Mm-hmm. That guy really stood out for a couple
of
scenes.
Kind of a Mark Ruffalo situation for me, Deej. Like really entertaining. Really enjoyed the shit out of it. Made me smile.
Sure, but Emma's the story. Though,
he's not going to get the big headliner award, but you know, it should be acknowledged. I just think. When players, you know, some people probably see that and see like someone being a whiny bitch, but I see that as like, I think it shows you give a shit, that you care, that you're bothered by the fact that your game is not there. I was trying to explain to my wife about how Jordan Spieth is an external processor and Rory's like an internal processor, and how when they were playing together on Saturday, I was like, watch how Jordan will like just have a constant like running dialogue with his caddy, whereas Rory might say like 10 words to his caddy the entire day. So it was fun to see him today just go nuclear, even though it did happen during playing through and was kind of barely commented on, Solly. So,
you know, that was my number two pick. Solly, are you a YouTube TV guy as well?
Of course.
You know how they have the catch up to through key plays thing, which you use a lot for like baseball. If you tune in like the fifth inning, it's like, okay, it's 3-1. Here's how the three runs happened. You know, whatever. Usually there's like six plays or whatever. And I turned it on and I missed the first maybe like hour and a half of the golf and was like, oh, I'll catch up through key plays. And there was like 36 and like 12 of them were playing through. So I'm like watching stuff from like an hour and a half ago and it's on playing through. It's like watching old commercials. It's just true nesting doll of ads type stuff.
Can I say, I don't know if we're in a new era, but I'm really proud of myself for didn't say a word after Rory's 30, back 930 on Saturday, and I did not fake that he could come back and win today. I did not fall for it. Did not fall in the trap. I was prepared for that one to not. And I just clarify, do we think it's a good sign for his golf game going forward that he's showing this emotion? Because honestly, after watching the full swing thing and watching him say, like, I think I need a full reboot, and watching him continue to shit himself left, like with irons, has me like not... I don't know. I'm not seeing a guy who's giving a shit. I'm seeing a guy who's like up against a wall with frustration. And trying to pull off shots that he should not, like that they're just not smart golf shots. And like, if you can't see how big the gap is in ball striking between him and Scotty right now, and how they're picking apart golf courses. Like, I don't know, man. That is just some really concerning stuff from Rory basically all season so far.
You know, I was thinking about – go ahead, Kev.
I just think that, you know, I think it goes back to – I talked to somebody when we were at Pebble about you guys need to stop saying Rory's great. Rory's gonna win a Masters eventually. Like, it'd be beneficial to Rory if you said, Rory stinks. Rory cannot – like, he's not going to win a major this year. Like, he's got way too many flaws in his game, because it would piss him off enough to where he'd be like, you know what? I actually thrive on doubt. He was like, as soon as
Randy did that 5 years ago, though, and I think
was able to laugh it off and be like, oh, it's big Randy. Like, you know, in general, what if everybody in the media, like, what if, listen, we just, like, there was a column out there that was like, Rory's a fraud. Rory's not going to win any majors. I don't believe it, but I think like that might fire him up enough. Maybe Scotty kicking ass all of a sudden, and Rory being the person who said, put a mallet in your hand, or, you know, or otherwise, you know, the rest of us have a chance. Maybe that'll be what lights a fire in Rory a little bit and be like, hey, you know what? Fuck it. Like, I got to play really disciplined, really smart golf. I got to not like look what Scotty did. He's not taking like a shit ton of chances. He's just putting himself in spots and, you know, hitting great irons when he has to. And not, you know, I just think Rory needs something motivationally that's a reboot, not necessarily swing reboot, in my opinion.
I think if golf was covered like other sports, the Rory coverage right now would not be great.
No, for sure. I think there's a lot of like, oh, he's a great guy. He's got a lot on his mind, you know, whatever. Like, that doesn't work that way in the NBA, man, or in the NFL. Like, you get absolutely savaged if you are not playing up to your abilities. Nobody's like, oh, he'll figure it out, like, in the rest of the season.
Yeah, but also pay us like we are playing in the NFL. sure. What I was going to say on that front was, I think part of what made some of the juice, like some of the West Coast swing really like lacking in juice, other than, you know, obviously like all these guys kind of not really being there, is I feel like a lot of those tournaments like January, February are just like, you can't really trick yourself into like, oh, this is a really big deal for the Masters. Whereas now I feel like almost Bay Hill is kind of the first one where it's like, okay, now we're starting to get close. And the reason I bring that up is like, is next week like low key kind of a massive, massive week for Rory to show something?
Yeah, I think so. To show you're like awake this season, that you're going to be sort of, you know, you've gotten off all of the, you know, the committees, you've eliminated distractions, like you've won on this golf course before.
Because if right now it's like a lot of those, the risk taking and that kind of stuff, I mean, you could, again, the months and months and months leading up to the Masters, you could convince me like, he's playing for four times a year. He's, you know, he's trying to pull off a couple of things. He's keeping himself entertained. He's keeping, you know, trying to keep himself in some sort of mindset or whatever. But like the players is like, okay, man, we're getting close now. Like, go out and whatever your best is, like, let's see it. Let's not fuck around here anymore.
Yeah. We've seen win the players and not go on to win the Masters. We've seen them play bad at the players and not go on to win the Masters. If the style of play was somewhat closer, I could maybe agree with it. It's just so different. Like, it, you know, Pete Dye is very, very technical skiing and, you know, like, it is very flat, and Augusta's all about, it's just totally different styles of golf shots. It really is totally different style of play, totally different greens that, like, yeah, you want to see him doing something, but also, like, again, Phil finished second in the Masters last year. Like, some dudes play great there and some don't. I don't know. It is like, again, my whole thing, which was, you know, kind of what I was commenting on earlier in the week, is like, are these signature events, are these big events, do they matter or not, right?
Yeah, totally.
Look, we can maybe reach the conclusion that they don't, that these are a massive failure and whatnot.
Save like, everybody a lot of time.
But, dude, you know? I mean, for what's left on the PGA Tour, aside from Milton, everyone was there this week. Like, that was all the best players in the world. So, like, that doesn't happen all the time. Like, that's a big event. Like, that's a really important event.
God, like, it never doesn't make me laugh. Every time.
I really don't know Tony Finau's name is Milton, but...
Well, I thought I was really co-signing a lot of what you were saying earlier in the week, which is like, man, if we can't get fired up about these, then like, what are we even doing? If every week just turns into like, why would you even care about this? Like, you're stupid. You're like, well, yeah, I guess maybe we shouldn't care about any of it then.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I have a point about that I'd like to make in my next draft pick, but I think it's Solly's turn. So
my turn, I think, but Solly wants to do an ad read.
I do want to do an ad read. We are
thank goodness.
We're all over the place here. This is a late one. We're gonna have a shout out to guess who? You know it. Roback activewear. That was my worst transition yet. I don't like when somebody else tees me up for it, right? I need to go ISO, man. Clear out. I need you to do
it. It was truly too wide open. He just fumbled it.
I need a hand in my face. You know Roback, best fit, best feel. They are fresh off new stock, restocks of our favorite polos, hoodies, and Q-zips. Trust us when we say there isn't better gear for when you're playing golf or just out and about. The fit, the feel, the quality, it is perfect. They got some brand new performance polos. The material is moisture wicking. It's got great stretch. The collar is so crisp, does not lose its shape. Fits way better than boxy polos do. They got great women's stuff as well, by the way. Fantastic performance hoodies. Probably my favorite. Yeah, definitely my favorite hoodie I've ever worn. The fabric is so soft. I wear them almost every single day. The Q-zips are fantastic. I absolutely love them. Love what they do with the zippers. They got this classic look, but with soft performance fabric that makes them very comfortable. They're very versatile. If you haven't already, load up on some Roback for yourself and for others. Code NLU at Roback.com for generous 20% off your first order through the end of this week. That's R-H-O-B-A-C-K. .com, 20% off bottoms, Q-zips, hoodies, and more with code NLU. Get ready for the golf season with Roback. All right, Pie Man, you are up.
Yeah, my draft pick. With the second pick, I'd like to bring in, I'd like to call for some help on the podium here from our guy, Cody. Cody, if you could help me with this next selection. You know, let me take you back to 2010. It was, a formative time in my life, certainly. Young man bursts onto the scene, British amateur champion, just really maybe the coolest looking kid we've seen in the game of golf. He wins on the DP World Tour at the age of 17. That, of course, is Matteo Manassero. And he goes on by 2013. He's got four wins. He's 21 years old. He looks like he's going to be the next thing. And then he doesn't win for almost 11 years until today. Cody, our guy, is so back. We've just been waiting for this moment, and was it the best field in South Africa at the DP World Tour event? Probably not, but a win is a win, as my guy said earlier, and we're happy to see Matteo Manassero back in the winner's circle.
Deej, it's been so long. I think this is it's one of those things where you honestly forget about people.
This pod never did not exist when last time he won.
I just think it's one of those things where people like honestly forget about how damn good he was. And like in this last month of our lives, when all the talk's been about AK, who also had an awesome fucking day today about like how good these people were.
Spoil my draft picks, goddammit.
But it's Mateo, like he lost his game. And for people who are like, what the hell happened? He wanted to chase speed. So he set out like a lot of people did and tried to bulk up and get faster. And what it did is that took all of the skills away from him. He was a phenomenal ball striker. He had an amazing short game and he just made buckets of putts. And it all went away because he tried to get a little bit more extra distance. He gave up the game for a little bit, like straight up quit. And then 2 years ago, started putting things back together. Won last year on the Challenge Tour. Got his full-time card back on the DP World Tour, and now he's back in the winner's circle. And like I said, it's really damn hard to win, Solly. So yeah, he is back, man, because this is awesome to see.
Congratulations.
God, nobody else.
No, it's very... I don't know what back means, but then you're going to make me be the bad guy here like I'm shitting on Matteo Manassero after he just won, which I'm not trying to do at all. I was stunned to see that before. He's back? Like, really? He's back? We're going there? Right?
He quit golf.
The South African Open has a long history of many fine performers, as Mr. Gary Player would say.
Exactly right.
Was this the South African Open?
It was in South Africa.
Thank you, dude.
Yes. It was some workwear open.
Yeah, the Johnson workwear open, I believe.
Well, Gary Player probably won that too. I mean, let's be real.
He was, dude, go look at some of the photos of him when he was like the young Italian guy winning the British AM. He was so cool. He was wearing no hat, hair's flying all over the place. Just that was like right when I started working in the golf industry. And it was a true, like, who is that guy? That's going to be my dude. And just not a good pick over the last decade. But
can't believe he's 30 years old.
I know. It's crazy. It's
wild.
Solly, to you.
I don't really know where I'm going with this other than like, I like Shane Lowry.
Strategy.
I like when he pops up on screen. I like his interviews. I just, he capitalized on a sponsor's exemption. He kind of floats in this weird space of like nobody ever really talks about him, but he's a really good player, but he's not a great player. And he's always doing stuff. He's got a great personality. And, you know, I really enjoyed him in Full Swing. I just think he's like some of his moments in there. And I don't know. We don't talk about him enough. And I just wanted to say he's a positive. I like when he's up on the leaderboard. I like how well he plays this, weirdly plays this Florida stretch here the last couple years, several years he's done it. And I hope he has a great major championship season.
When we're inevitably cherry picking like what becomes Live 2.0, Kev, as you said, and we're just kind of picking like, let's just pick the guys we like and put them on a tour. I think Shea Lowry's on that tour. To your point, Solly.
I'm down with that. Listen, guys with beards, guys who are a little thick around the middle, like I can get behind that. They deserve all the exemptions into all the events.
Is any issues with the exemptions? That kind of just hit me. I know, like, if we're going to throw any shade at that, we got to probably throw shade at Mav getting into the AT&T as well for kind of the same reasons, right? It's kind of a sponsor relations thing. I mean, my issue is, like, you know, if we're going to try to separate these events from the rest of the events, it kind of seems like competition needs to rule the day, and it needs to be very cut and dry as far as who gets in and who doesn't and who earned a spot and who didn't. And so I think you could kind of knock me either way on that one. But I think my gut is kind of sponsor exemptions into these designated events, signature events, elevated events. Ultimately, probably not great.
Maybe if you miss the cut, if you get a sponsor exemption, you shouldn't get any more sponsor exemptions, Steve. Like, that's the Randy rule there. Like,
how about Adam Scott? Adam Scott's a perfect example, right?
Blown off the map.
Yeah, that's he keeps getting exemptions into these things, and because
working too hard,
he's a policy board member, and like comes in and missed the cut this week. It's like that's probably not great.
Like perfect world scenario. Yeah, I do agree with you, Deej, but they're paying so much damn money. Why would they not get their brand investors? Plus, it makes me think of like how sick it would be. So, you know, we got like super hyped into F1, just like everyone else in America. And then that quickly went away when I'm like, oh, yeah, cool. We have other stuff that we can watch again. But everybody has that second driver. And at Pebble Beach, what did we see Mav doing? Like, he was the blocker for Spieth. So like every single AT&T thing, like Jordan didn't have to do it because Mav was there. Who had to play with Condi? You know, it wasn't Jordan. Mav was out there, you know, just taking bullets. Maybe that's what Shane did this week to free up our guy Max. Who knows?
Interesting. Well, Kyle Juszczyk situation. Throwing blocks, letting the stars perform.
Like, that would be sick too if you had like the number two guys just out there like messing people up and like protecting the number one player. I could get down with that, but I don't know. It's a tough look when you see, Adam missing the cut and everything else like that. I agree with you.
It just gets weird. A lot of baseball stuff tonight, I know, but it just gets weird when you start to get to this point of like, okay, here's our lineup. These guys have earned their spot. And then, of course, the third baseman, he will be starting because he's sponsored by Rawlings. And like, that just is, there's a relationship there. So that's
a catcher thing. Like, dude, that guy should have been cut fucking years ago. But you know what? He's Scherzer's guy. You got to keep him.
Exactly.
The Savannah Bananas just did that. You saw they brought back Roger Clemens and Roy Oswalt to play. Yeah.
Bit, so. Can't separate them.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I'm too far down the rabbit hole of just being resigned to certain things in pro golf of like, this is truly extenuating circumstances for the PGA Tour. And like, with in desperation, they're asking, you know, folks to pony up $25 million. Like, them being able to put their ambassador in the field doesn't ruin it for me. Like, it's still like, dude, yeah, what 90+%, almost 90% of this field is made up of dudes that are straight qualified. More than that, I can't do the math on the spot, but more than 90%. And if you can't beat the sponsor exemption that couldn't get in anyways, like, you know, that's on you as well. So people are going to scrutinize it's not perfect, it's not great, but like at the same time, again, like I would point to like who's the 70th guy that is left out of this field. And it's probably a name. I can't like name somebody off the top of my head that like should have been in the field this week that wasn't. So that's kind of where I end up.
All right, Kev, last pick.
I'm going to go with Anthony Kim shooting 65 in the live event in the final round. Still finished 50th out of 54 people, but made 7 birdies today, which, including shot a 30 on the back nine, the par 70. I know it was only 6,700 yards, whatever. But I do think it's a kind of a fun sign. I don't know whether Anthony Kim will ever be good at golf again, but it has to feel pretty good to, in a competitive event, to go out and shoot 65. Like, you may not be able to do it over a sustained period, but it does show like, hey, there's still some talent there, whatever back injury that drove him from the game wasn't so debilitating that he can't play golf at a, you know, professional-ish level. And so I do think that was fun. I stayed up till 3 a.m. to watch it, but I did catch the highlights. He seemed to be kind of ecstatic afterwards. But it does want to use this to raise a question. I brought this up in our chat this week. How am I supposed to feel about LIV golfers when they play poorly versus when they play bad? Because it seems to be a confusing message sometimes where, like, you know what? If this shit matters and it's really important, then Legion 13, you're on notice because you finished 20 shots out of first this week. The Crushers whooped that ass. Like, Caleb Surratt, terrible. Rahm is the only person was any good this week. I'm saying if it matters, then I want to be able to sort of get on your ass. Like, look, like, why didn't you guys play better? If it doesn't matter, then like, why should the good matter? Like, why should I care about, like, the both have to matter. We have to be able to be like, you know what? Phil shooting 80, like, that's a pretty shitty performance. Like, maybe Phil doesn't deserve his spot and maybe the high flyers need a total reboot. But if like the good matters, then I'm willing to talk about the good too, as long as I can criticize the bad. This is where I'm at with Liv.
It's an expansion team. You got to give them a little bit, KVB.
Why are they like a founding team? Frankly, they founded the whole fucking league.
Yeah.
It's a very Baltimore thing of you, just because you steal teams from other places. You know, some team, it takes time. Okay. Give them a little bit of a.
But that's it. It takes time? Like, this is in the Premier League. Why would you criticize that team for playing shitty? Like, no, like if you're a fan of the team, yeah, you get pissed and you're
ass beat. Yeah.
I just don't ever see any like LIV fans out there who are being like, man, it's frustrating as a fan of the High Flyers to see this team suck it over and over again. I'm pissed about Legion 13's performance this week. I think Tron is the only person who covers LIV honestly. He's like genuinely angry when his teams don't play well. And so I feel like that's the way that LIV should be thought of covered going forward. If we're going to take them seriously as a natural thing, then we should be able to be like, you know what? That stinks.
Let me float this thought alternatively. Maybe what if it doesn't matter? What if the whole thing is a giant act and everybody's just making a shitload of money and a big sports washing it? Just imagine that world that maybe that might entertain that thought that it might be true. I don't know.
I feel like some people have said that's like the best possible way to like take the piss out of LIV is just like cover it like very earnestly and just you start to realize like how fucking stupid it sounds. And KBB, I'm with you. I hadn't really thought about it like that, but like the spectrum of takes is so wide, right? Between like exactly what you said, like the bottom end of just now who cares, man, guy got the bag, like come on, don't overthink it, he's totally, none of this matters, he's just there for the Masters, right? Like he's good. How are you insulting these guys, what they're doing? You have no idea
how hard it is.
These guys are working behind the scenes,
pioneers.
It's such kid gloves the way that even the fans cover the whole league. They're never critical, they're never annoyed, they're never like, I wish they would do it this way. It's all just like, yay, these guys are pissing in the potty. They're doing great. Like, come on.
On the AK note, also cool that, sincerely cool that I think he's playing the Macau event this week, right? He's going to keep it going. He's going to go play an Asian Tour event with a cut, 72 holes. We'll see, you know, if he doesn't make the cut, he doesn't make any money. It's not like that's, you know, I think that is a good kind of counterbalance to like, he's a circus act. Mm-hmm. He's just there to play X number of contractual events and cash a check. Maybe he's got an interest in actually like, you know, getting out there and
chasing it, man.
Chasing it. Yeah. I'm excited to see it. I'm excited to see what happens.
I think it would be so fun to like earnestly ask Bryson questions about like what did you feel like your team is like on a dominant run right now? Like I would love to get Bryson's earnest answers of like you were covering the league dead serious way. And
we should send Sol in there with a sabermetrics packet to start going through it. Like, so, Bryson, this makes no sense. For this golf course, you could have signed this guy to play this. This doesn't make any sense. Why are you letting this?
That's a great point. And I have some things to think about. Like, we're really, you know, I'm going to get the guys in the lab and just, we're going to really reboot this. We're going after this title. Our fans deserve more.
Any updates on Bryson's team will come from him and his team only.
AK thing, this is what like AK used to do though, just make like a million birdies, fill it all the way up and have like bogeys and doubles and everything. So this is definitely positive signs. I did not see this coming at all. And huge shout out to AK. I also saw something that when he showed up to Saudi Arabia, he had like off the rack clubs. That he didn't get fit for anything. He literally was just like, yeah, give me that driver and those woods and irons and I'm going to roll this shit and go. Still didn't know what a track man was, I guess.
I heard
don't know if it was DJ actually, or somebody else.
I heard from a source, Cody, that he wanted to play with his 10-year-old clubs, that he was just like, well, I got these old clubs there. I haven't hit them for a while. And they were like, well, let's at least get you some newer models, man. Like, this technology's advanced a little bit. So
I remain extremely apprehensive on anything AK, and that I mean, what I said last week was just like, I hope whatever he's doing on the professional golf front is giving him the personal fulfillment he needs more than like, I want to see this be like a pawn in these massive golf wars, which I have a sneaky suspicion that it is. But I hope this is like, he's there on his own, like, intuition and wants to be doing this and is seeking the personal fulfillment out of it more than like, you know, kind of being forced into this. Cause from all accounts, it sounds like it's happening way too fast. I don't know if one really good round out of six changes a whole lot of forward prognosis for him. I hope to be wrong on that. Again, I hope he finds success and I hope that he's getting fulfillment out of chasing whatever he's chasing. Again, it's still really hard to like understand it all without having heard what you've been up to for the last like 12 years, man. Like, we can't, it's really, really hard to just treat the golf like just that it matters this much. I don't know. It's so just like, an awkward spot.
Which one of Phil Mickelson's chess moves do you think losing to Anthony Kim this week was? What's that?
That's a personal sacrifice. You know,
he's playing the trap, man.
Yeah, it's personal sacrifice.
He watched that in the Queen's Gambit. It was like, all right, I'm gonna boost up my guy here, and then I'm running and around with my rooks and my knights.
You can't use my Slack jokes against me in the show. This was...
You should have had a higher draft pick. Sub for a taken.
All right, a lot of directions I can go with this last pick. You know, I'm gonna take Smiley's Friday Happy Hour. As my final pick. NBC, you know, coming off the success of Smiley Kaufman and Kevin Kisner, you know, at the 16th at Waste Management and kind of chopping it up and having a good time and just doing a little bit of low stakes kind of interview type of coverage, decided to bring in, I think they did this last week as well, but
they did with Paul Goldschmidt from the shitty Cardinals.
Los Cardinals. Best shout out to the best fans in baseball. So the idea here was like bringing in Jordan Spieth and Max Homa on kind of just, again, like some low stakes content on a Friday. You know, you've got you're watching the final couple groups finish up on the golf course, but you're also kind of sort of acting a little bit like a podcast, just asking these guys some, you know, questions about not only Bay Hill, and they had just both come off the golf course and were given some good insight on how the course was playing and what was different and how the course has changed over the years, but also just kind of, you know, weaving in, dare I say, some fun moments, maybe a little bit forced, but ultimately I think probably pretty fun stuff, probably a little, maybe a little kind of over just gripping the steering wheel a little too hard still by the production team. Maybe I think, like, you know, in a weird way, I don't want to have it both ways, but like, I feel like the weeks I'm really looking for this is not necessarily like the biggest weeks of the year where the golf kind of does speak for itself, but more on like those other weeks where it's like, man, that's where it feels like you could get, you know, get some really good stuff and differentiate yourself. But still a lot of like, it's less like kind of two guys hanging out and, you know, chopping it up, and more just like eight talking heads kind of all trying to get a word in, and graphics and pre-packaged things. And it just feels like a lot of work, and I don't know how sustainable that is. Whereas I feel like just getting guys to come in, chop it up for a while and like have a good time would be a lot easier for everybody.
We don't need the booth also with those two guys. Like, just let them go. Like, you can just tell Smiley's got, you know, producers in his ear and they're trying to balance all this stuff and like, all right, go be zany, go do it. Yeah. And like, just let them go, let them run. I think there's plenty of room for a half an hour, you know, with commercials in there, you're probably talking 22 minutes or something like that. Just go to the different golf shots. I just don't need to hear, oh, this putt's going to move left to right, you know, from, you know, an announcer every single hour of every hour of coverage. Like, let them run.
And I think if you don't have those guys in there, like, I think back to like when we did the PGA Championship thing with ESPN last year, and it's a lot of like just watching, you know, you're watching a ton of different stuff and it gives you like an opportunity to talk about a ton of different things. I'd almost rather have like Jordan and Smiley watch the actual coverage, not just like the one hole. They're just like sitting there at 16, and then it gets hard because like, you're just saying 10 times in a row like, oh, this guy's a great putter, bet this one goes in. You know, like when you're actually flying around all the golf course. You're almost like playing the golf as it would normally play on a Friday, and you're just kind of like slotting those two guys in underneath it is kind of feels like the sweet spot to me. And that's where it's like, oh, we're over here on the seventh hole, and now all of a sudden we have a shot of Denny McCarthy, and like, oh, Jordan's got this great Denny McCarthy story he can tell over the next, you know, 2 minutes is kind of like a, that's what it feels like would be better. But I want to praise progress that it seemed like they gave a shit. They put in some effort, and I was for one borderline entertained.
Can I throw out a suggestion that would maybe for next week? If I come out with like Steve Cohen or Arthur Blank, I would call up Tiger and be like, I would love to see you in the booth for an hour. Like, you're not going to play in this event. How about go in there and just throw some Tiger zingers out there at all these people? Tell some of your stories, some nicknames, because I would be into that. I would love to hear Tiger be like, oh, well, you got to hit a, you know, a big trap draw here. You got to, you know, this is the perfect place to
hit. Better than most at this on this one.
Watch this. Well, you know, Sanzi, I've made that putt a few times, if you remember. That would be awesome. I think that would be growing the whole pie or whatever of not the game, but the PGA Tour Enterprises pie. If you can't use Tiger to play every week, like, tell him, hey, you know what? We could really use the help here of you being in the booth and throwing out some of your Tiger zingers.
How do you guys feel? And this is doing these guys dirty, because I do not mean to bring these two ideas back to back, because one is going to pale in comparison. But how do you feel about them bringing Roger Maltby and Gary Koch into the booth next week? Because I brought that up and like, oh, you know what? I actually really like both of those guys, and I kind of miss them, and I will actually appreciate hearing from them. Compared to having Tiger in the booth for a couple hours, obviously it's a little different. But again, I think it shows maybe at least a little bit of like creativity, and like, let's not just like keep doing exactly the same thing every week. So I don't know.
It's a little bit like playing the hits that, you know, you think that the older crowd wants to hear. And, you know, I think Tiger's probably a little bit updated version of that. So I don't hate the idea of those guys, but I don't think it would quite be as much. Like, obviously, like, this was the Phil role that he should have played for 15, 20 years, right? He would have been so good at this and would have made you want to hear him just like Johnny Miller did. So you don't have a replacement for Phil in that sense. I do think that, like, it looks like Kevin Kisner's going to get that seat, and I think he's pretty good at it. I am not personally like in love with Luke Donald as the sort of person in that chair, and I think Kisner's is better, and so I'm glad they seem to be leaning that way. But you know, I'd try shit, might as well try it.
Yeah, I think there's nothing offensive about Raj and Gary Koch. I think after listening to them every Sunday for a long period of time, you can kind of get a little fatigue of them, and they don't really say anything controversial. They don't really say anything, you know, that offends you, right? But, you know, it'll be nice to have some familiar voices back. But that team worked so well when they had Johnny. Like, Dan Hicks to Johnny to Raj to Gary was like, that was good TV. That really was. And it's kind of, but Johnny was the glue, and like, ever since then, like, it's just not been the same kind of vibe on that among that group. So my final draft pick, I just want to give a big shout out to massive ejections, like just totally blowing out the O-ring and just enormous explosions, like we saw on the sixth hole a couple times this week. Tommy Fleetwood made a 10 on six, and then Jake Knapp, after I watched him eagle that hole when he was playing with JT earlier in the week, and then just ejected with a 12 on Saturday before I had even had a chance to get to a television. That is one thing that Bay Hill gives us, that sixth hole will always give us, is massive multi-car pileups like we saw there. So shout out for that one.
Sans referred to it as one of the great par fives in the world.
Yeah,
Folly, even totally. Defended. Is totally. It to say that? Trent?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, for sure. I think of like 13 Augusta and then like 6 Bay Hill, like the dogleg left. Those are the two that come to mind. But
I think 6 is sweet. I'm unironically, I think it's dope. I'm in on it.
It's must see TV. It is. I don't know, dude.
Bryson driving the sixth, or that was like driving so awesome. Over on that line, was like truly one of the best PGA Tour moments of the last 5 years.
Totally. We had no idea how good we had it in 2021.
We had everything, man.
Maybe that's everything. What's holding up the deal, is that Bryson really wants to go play that, and they're just not sure if they want that spectacle again. And until they get an agreement on whether Bryson should be allowed to drive that hole, then we're just going to keep pushing it back.
Do you think those that 6 week stretch? Do you think that what is the peak of the PGA Tour?
I think it was all downhill from there.
Just, never I wish, like, remember every week he's going and they're like we're getting like these reports. It's like the Babe Ruth like train.
Remember when they had to put the OB in at the players?
Yeah, they're having it like they're having.
I'm not going to believe what's going on this week. Bryson is back and he's taking all the boys.
They're having to build taller nets every week. He shows up. They're adding out of bounds. He's put on 50 pounds.
Remember when the Heritage spent like $200,000 on the additional net and then he didn't come? Like, that was amazing.
That might be as good as it's going to get.
I kind of wish we had bought that NFT that he put up for sale. Like, imagine if we just still had that. Like, you know, that would be a good, you know, Kill House in Memoriam type of thing.
It really is hard for me to separate out, like all of the Arnie fawning and the fawning on the broadcast, like the things like that of, you know, the sixth at Bay Hill is one of the best par fives in the world. It's hard like for that not to be a strike against this tournament, because the whole thing is just like, it's a massive commercial load every year, somehow better than last year. And it just like, it just, this tournament always just feels so dated. Everything feels so dated. And it, I don't know, that's such a contributing factor, is just how everything, they tie everything back to Arnie in some corny way. And I don't mean to diminish the effect he's had on the game, but it just like, just feels like such an unnatural way to honor him, just because it leaves me with a bad taste in my mouth every year, that part.
Yeah, and
that's curmudgeon take, I know.
Well, I say this every year on this podcast, like the week before the Players, is like, especially look at like how it stands in contrast to the Players. Cause I always like, you know, I unabashed PGA Tour dick rider here, but like the Players is sweet.
Yeah.
And NBC usually balls out. And I think a lot of that is like the PGA Tour probably paying for extra production costs and making sure all the bells and whistles are there and whatever. But when that tournament's like turned up to a million and you have a good finish, like that's pretty much as good as, like, that's up there, man. That's up there with, truly like up there with the majors too, I think. And I'm not saying it is a major or any of that stuff, but the TV product, when it goes commercial free of guys playing 16, 17, 18, truly is like as good as it gets. And you got Gold Boy, as the commenters are reminding me. So yeah, it's, I don't know. It's an interesting one because it's the same tour. It's the same Players. It's the same broadcast. So a lot of it probably is that saccharine kind of Arnie stuff. But
and look,
they should play it at like Latrobe Country Club some deer. They should just go back to Latrobe and be really sick. Like, you know, here, we're gonna play this from 6,800 yards and you guys,
everybody grab a club out of the barn and go
yes.
And you know, you guys talked Bay Hill earlier, and I know I was hard on Bay Hill in our preview, and I know I've been hard on in the past, and I thought about it more this week. I have to revise my take a bit. I do have to revise it a bit. It's worse than I said out loud. Like it's only redeeming factor is that it's hard, truly. Like that's, and I get that people like hard, and I'd rather watch hard golf than easy golf, but it's just everything I hate about golf course design and setup. It's again, when they, the tough conditions, again, this is going to be confusing. I'm well aware of that. Don't care. The tough conditions, it brings out the worst of the golf course. I'd still rather watch it because it does skew on the so bad it's entertaining spectrum for me, but it's just so much grass. It becomes a chipping contest from a foot off the green, unnatural mowing lines, dog legs that don't really make sense, just balls that a very mediocre shot can end up in the same spot as a very good shot just because of how firm the greens get and how the ball is going to roll through it. And again, some of this stuff matters to people. Most people, it doesn't matter to. I just do not try to get in my mentions and try to dunk on me on my Bay Hill takes. Don't say that I'm inconsistent about what I like about golf courses. Don't try to, like, we've made it very, very clear on like Riviera as to why that's entertaining. A lot of that is incredible contouring and short rough that promotes creative shot making, and really weak contouring and thick rough that promotes no exciting shot making. Is there are two ends of the spectrum for me. And that is how I feel about Bay Hill. Yet at the same time, it's very interesting to watch dudes go through this like test. It's just a very exhausting watch for 4 days for me. I don't like watching chipping out of that stuff. Brandel tried to make the point that it's, oh, people online are saying that, you know, it only promotes one kind of shot. That's just not accurate. It's like, no, it's extremely accurate. And short grass promotes many different kinds of shots and long grass doesn't. So that's my take on the situation.
I just got to, like, as a pure like chaos agent, that they have to like take lines over people's patios and like fucking there's a bush in front of a T-box, and like some of the lines that like Rory has to take to hit like his normal shot are just flat out stupid, and I sort of enjoy him being forced to do that kind of stuff. Scotty shows that like you can take the like the intended line and still thread it through these bunkers or whatever. I don't know, it's just, it's dumb, but I kind of am in on it. I don't care. I what I do think is frustrating is that other tournaments, maybe they can't do this with the conditions, or maybe there's memberships that won't allow it or whatever, but I wish they could make it as firm and as difficult, at least as firm as Bay Hill is. Like, it's fun to see balls hit the green and like roll out 20 feet, because then you know, like, it's a good shot is a good shot. And how often on the PGA Tour do you see someone take a 7-iron and hit it and the ball hits the green and rolls out, you know, 30 feet? Like, I think that's pretty rare. A lot of time, because they're just hitting wedges. So like, at least Bay Hill promotes you to have to hit some longer shots into the par fives, or like you have to take on the dog leg if you're going to get up closer to be able to hit a wedge, or lay back and hit a longer club.
And again, just to clarify, this is what, when firm becomes really interesting, it's when you do have like somewhat of options and there's interesting contouring that gets accentuated from the firmness. When it's really narrow and the greens are like angled funny and not that big in general, like the first green, the 10th green, the angle that you come into on the second green, like there's not I watched so many really good shots like end up a foot off the green in the thickest possible rough, which is just like so not, it's just not good architecture. It's not fun to watch.
That part, three times, Solly. Sonith was chipping all over this face off this week.
I don't think that's fun to watch. If you do, I'm not here to tell you you're wrong, but that is what I do like about this.
A lot of time by just dropping everybody there and then just making it like a chipping contest.
That's kind of my point. I do like is making this event a signature event and making it like not skippable. In terms of like how you, because part of what worked against this event was failing in a lot of ways, because guys were skipping it because it's too hard, setup is too ridiculous, guys did not like the golf course. That's still all true, but now it's like, no, you all got to play it. Like, you all got to go through that. I at least like that part of it, right? This has a role on the PGA Tour still. I am entertained by this tournament every year. I was stoked to watch today. It's like I said this Wednesday, but it's a difficult Thursday, Friday, even into Saturday watch. But it's like, I want to see that Sunday still on this golf course, even if it's bad architecture, bad design, and not what I like about watching pro golfers go through. It still has a role to play.
And that is where I feel like I called my shot on the Wednesday show, but just load management Thursday.
Yeah,
we will not be participating. Please don't. My phone is on do not disturb. Please don't contact me. I won't be watching any shots. Please let me know who's winning at the end of the day. That's about all I need. Friday, I tuned in for the happy hour, which was great. Ejected Saturday, watched the finish, and then Sunday watched all day. And I feel great. I feel like I haven't been eating just junk food all week. You know, just kept it really light this week, and I'm you know, in fighting shape, ready to go. Can't OD on Bay Hill, man. That's a rookie mistake.
That's a mistake. The golf midday Friday was like, even the PGA Tour live people were like, we've never had an hour of golf like this. It was so bad. Morikawa just sucking. Rory, it was a tough scene. But
does anyone need any supplemental draft picks here? You know, does it feel like you have any reason they need to throw anything else out?
I was going to throw out Joe Ogilvy joining the board of PGA Tour Enterprises. I think is interesting. I don't have a lot to say about it, but you know, a guy that's kind of, I think, always been, even since I worked at the tour, was kind of just always around, like, you know, this kind of like honorary half player, half commissioner, half executive type of person. So I think that's a really interesting thing to like actually happen. So that's interesting. Bailey Tardy, obviously winning on the LPGA is a cool story. She's kind of been KVV. She's one of those grinders that you know, get out there and tell those stories. She's a good one. She's an up and comer.
Listen, she did the opposite of what Rory did. Was Randy called her out and she, you know, she delivered and won. Maybe Rory needs to look to Bailey Tardy and see that the motivating factors are.
It's possible. And in contrast, I think throwing her out, like in contrast to the men's side of things, I think she's the first-time winner of the season for them. Like, it's kind of been hitters only on the LPGA. It's been a lot of big-name winners, and I think she's the first kind of debut winner over there.
I got to call out Sahith. another top 10 in a big event. And Bacon pointed this out on Twitter as well. Like, the dude is starting to drive his golf ball. He had 11 of 14 fairways today. Gained over two shots off the tee, which is very hard to do. Led the field in strokes gained off the tee today. He led the field in driving distance while hitting 11 fairways today. Like, it's if he can drive it like that, he had a really bad iron week, but you know he's going to chip it. You know he's going to putt it. Sahith is taking the leap right in front of us. He's had a clear up in play this year, and to see him do it in a big event on a difficult golf course is a good thing. And you know who keeps playing really good golf is Ben Ahn. That dude is up there all the freaking time. Another top 10 this week in a signature event. Nobody ever talks about him, but he just is playing tremendous golf.
I think Wyndham Clark too. I want to shout out him because I feel like Wyndham has shown this year that he's legitimately a top 10 player in the world. It wasn't a fluke. You know, we might look back on that U.S. Open win and be like, oh yeah, like Wyndham Clark won two majors in his career. Of course, it was not a big surprise that he outdueled Rory at a great golf course. Like, that makes sense. That was a truly great sort of historical clash between, you know, two, you know, bombers who are, you know, I think just Wyndham's short game is like really fun to watch. Like, he's obviously figured out something in putting that makes him a really, I mean, he's an unbelievable lag putter. I'm always impressed at how he's 30, 40 feet away and the ball is just dying right around the hole. And so I don't know what would be a great fit for him. Valhalla kind of maybe comes to mind as like, yeah, I could see that dude winning another major there. It's I think it's rare to probably, you know, if you're win majors in like back-to-back years, but also like you win them in bunches, right? Your windows are not that big. So really could be Wyndham's kind of time in a lot of ways as being the next tier below Scotty, below John Rahm, below Brooks Koepka, whatever.
Can we just shout this? Of last fiscal year, he won the Wells Fargo, won the U.S. Open, won Pebble, an elevated event, and almost won the runner-up to this one, to Scotty's runaway. Like, he almost won three signature events and a major in less than 12 months. Like, it's been a very, very, very good stretch of golf. His style of play seems really, really sustainable. He 190 mile an hour, like baby fade drivers, is going to play really well in the PGA Tour. And he's a really good iron player and has some hot peak putting weeks. Like, it's been an impressive step up. Didn't really endear himself a lot of ways this week. A little whiny, a little, you know, chopping at the ground after, you know, a chunk chip that was in kind of pitch, whatever, that was in a pitch mark. And then,
seemed like he also hated Bay Hill. You guys could probably find some community
that's,
in that.
We might. I might. That's why I'm a big fan. But Saturday, last hole, 18th hole. I'm curious your guys' thoughts on this. I'm very complicated thoughts personally. And he's in the very thick rough to the right of 18. He lays a club behind it. They zoom in on it, of course. And it certainly looked to me like the ball moved positions. And they looked at it afterwards. They agreed that it didn't move, and he was not penalized. What did you guys have strong feelings about all this? That was this was the first time ever. Like, it was a Saturday evening, and I was like, I saw it happening. I almost always never see the bullshit tweet storms like that ruin my night coming. This was like, I'm not going to spend my Saturday night on Twitter arguing whether his ball moved an inch. I'm not going to say anything about this.
I always struggle. This is a bit like worded across Twitter, where I'm just like, listen, I don't know, man. There's pros that are paid to work on this sort of thing who dedicate their lives to like the rules of golf, who know a lot more about it than I do. But if someone was to ask me like, hey, watch this video, do you think he's mashing this down? And like, do you think his ball moved? I'd be like, oh yeah, absolutely. Definitely is what it feels like to me. But like, listen, if Dusbabic is watching it and saying like, I don't really think so, and they're in the truck saying, I don't really think so, then like, I don't know. I certainly don't feel strong enough to like overrule what those guys are saying, but it's like, yeah, if you're asking me what I think about it, like, yeah, it looks awful. I think he's definitely mashing the rough down and definitely like the ball moved, but I don't know.
I'm of the same belief of like you guys that the ball moved. I don't think he like was intending to. I don't think he was intending to make the lie better. I don't really feel like you do that. Where I get into this, I think it's complicated, is the golf is then enforced unevenly. Like, right? Because there's a ton of chips all around Bay Hill all throughout the week that are not on camera, that are not on Saturday. And I don't know how, like, I guess I'm a little bit, like, we can slow this stuff down and get it in super slow-mo. We didn't always have those options, and golf kind of survived, right? Golf was, people were able to penalize themselves when they actually thought that they moved the ball. I just, I don't know what to do about this situation where 10% of the field is playing to a certain standard of the rules and the other 90% are kind of not. And when we talk about, well, there's a lot of money involved, like there's a lot of money involved and careers involved for the other 90% too. And they're just not subject to the same scrutiny.
The best conspiracy ever is like, that makes it pretty interesting. Patrick Reed made it through so many of those Monday qualifiers. Not a lot of cameras out there.
What DJ is saying is coincidental. And it's only
I said a conspiracy. Allegedly. I would never, ever believe something like that.
Yeah. Well, Stephen Britton, who's a friend of ours, who's a golf course superintendent as well, asked the question, when you have overseeded ryegrass, rough over 4 inches, juiced up with fertilizer, how do you place your club behind the ball without it moving? The player almost needs to hover the club every time with rough that thick. So yeah. That's where I go back to like, dude, this is a crazy bullshit setup that we have right here. Are we saying the rule is now for players, you can't like ground your club in the rough? Because that, again, I don't know how you do both of these things, how you can tightly enforce this rule and also have rough this thick, right? Because as long as I've played golf, like you put your club down behind your ball as where, you know, it kind of in line of where it's going to hit the ball, right? That's almost, nobody I know like hovers the ball above the rough. Like that's
Mr. Nicholas.
That's the alternative like option here, right? Otherwise, like this rule is really hard to write, right? I don't know, you know, when this happened with Rahm at the Memorial several years ago, like the label of his ball moved to a different location, right? That was very clear to me, right? I still think, more clear, like if they'd have said it moved, I'd be like, yeah, it does, it did. I can't, like, I'm not yelling at the screen like it moved, this is crazy cheating that's going on here, but it just seems really, really, really hard to enforce. And I don't know if they need to look at it again or if they want to say like, hey, this is allowed, what just happened there, like that ball moved a little bit but this is allowed, is maybe the better option as well.
Sully, you've played a lot of competitive golf. You've never in a tournament gone up there and you're like, wow, this ball's just kind of teed up here in this rough. I'm afraid to put, you know, ground my club behind it because it might move down. That's never happened.
I think I wouldn't consider this ball teed up. Was it teed up?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that you've never, because you just said, you're like, I've never hovered my club or anything to make sure that the ball wouldn't move, which I think is crazy because I think that happens to me a lot. I think I was like, it's actually a horrible story for me, but my sophomore year in high school called a penalty on myself. Shout out to Mr. Palmer because I improved the lie because I, like an idiot, went up there and put my 3-iron down behind this ball and it literally just dropped straight down. And I was like, fuck, man. Like I popped my head up and like the two guys that I was playing with were like staring right at me. I'm like, yeah, it moved, man. I'll call the penalty on myself. But I think it's grass dependent. And that's what I think the great job that Steven does, because there's not a lot of options around it outside of like, don't ground your club. And we saw this a lot at the beginning of last year as well. I know TC was hammering Scotty for this because Scotty also has a tendency to just kind of get there and start tapping around to make sure that you can get some decent contact on the ball. It happens every single week. I think what this circumstance now with Wyndham, it's just now the cameras are always on you, dog. And I think it comes back to like the tour. If they're going to call it and make it stick. If not, then keep it moving. But at the end of the day, I don't think like the way that he went about it, he actually made it worse for himself. So I think that needs to like weigh into this as well.
When's the last time you saw a player like who was, you know, in contention call a penalty on themselves? I don't think it happens anymore. They're always like, oh, let the rules people sort this out. Where just, I don't know.
The only one I remember is Brian Davis like a million years ago in that playoff.
It just seems like they do not do that kind of thing. They're never willing to sort of accept like I might have done something wrong here. You know, there's all these stories out through golf lore of like I slept on this and I just couldn't live with myself and I decided to call a penalty on myself. Like, man, that does not happen anymore.
Well, the rules have shifted a little bit more away to be like for some of these, like the ball oscillated isn't a penalty anymore or like some of these, like you can ground your club now in water hazards or something like that. They're just a little bit more leeway in a lot of those things to be more intent based. So there's less likelihood of like having to call a penalty on yourself since 2019. But it does seem like the only thing that came to mind was when Rahm accidentally just picked up his ball on the green instead of marking it. Like he called a penalty on himself. That's the most recent one I could think of just he just totally forgot to mark his ball. That was sick. But mostly all that to say, pretty much unsubscribe from this one, just because, like, I don't care that much. People they get this fired up about something like this one. Again, well, I would point this
welcome,
at
brother. Wow, selective with the rules, Sully. I hate seeing this, man.
No,
this rule. I guess we'll just apply them whenever you want. So no,
this is me blaming the thick ass rough. Welcome, if this happened brother. At Riv, I would feel probably pretty differently about it. One, we'd have a clear shot of the ball because it wouldn't be sitting in 4-inch rough, and like that's a different. It's just this is a bullshit way of playing golf. I really do think it's just very unnatural. It's overseeded rye and it's that thick. Like you're just going to get some really squirrely situations like this. And it probably happened on so many greenside shots over the course of this week. Anyways, we didn't mention Spieth at all this week. Guys, the guy is playing golf like he's got 2 months left on the lease. And he just knows that he's not getting the security deposit back. Like, he's not taking care of the place anymore. Like he's just, reaching for provisionals while twice this week for, with balls that were still in the air and just like watching two shots vaporize that quickly on two different occasions and knowing how valuable each shot is on the PGA Tour. He just cannot maintain the forward momentum for 72 holes. And, he's just showing flashes of it. I know Porter was tweeting out stuff of like his strokes gained looks really good in line with how he usually performs in the Masters. But, man, it just still does not seem like he's capable of putting 72 good holes together.
Yeah, it just is hard. I know it's 1 week, it's one round, it's whatever from Scotty today, but it's just hard not to like have a Scotty sized shadow over every other like player performance, right? Where it's like, maybe he like, even if he puts 72 holes together, like he's also got to like, you need Scotty to like come backwards based on what we've seen the last, 2 years from Scotty. Yeah. So I don't know. It's hard to, it's hard to not think of things in those terms.
Porter and I were once walking around the, I think it was the PGA Championship. It was when Koepka won and Spieth was in second that year. And he was just making like every single putt that he looked at, whatever. And I was like, you know what? It feels like watching Jordan play in this era. It's like watching a guy like ride a unicycle down a flight of stairs. Like you can either be really impressed that the dude is still doing it and not crashing, or you can be like, he's going to crash eventually. Like you can look at it two different ways. And that's just how I always feel about him. Like, yeah, man, like he's... he's going to do some shit. He's going to hit some shots left-handed. Like he's completely going to, reach for a ball in midair when he's already bombing one in the middle of the lake. And you'll never convince me that he's not someone who could contend at Augusta, because that place like lights up his brain in ways that other courses, or a British Open. Like I feel like he could always be in contention at one of those, but in a day-to-day week-to-week PGA Tour tournament, like I don't really think that that's his kind of golf anymore.
I hate hearing that, but I'm afraid you're right. I am afraid you're right there. We should mention Abe Anser. He gave up a 5-shot, 36-hole lead, but did come back to win in a playoff with Paul Casey and Cam Smith. Cam Smith finally playing a little bit of golf. Been waiting for that one for quite some time.
Joakim Neiman. Don't overlook the Crushers, Sully, too. The Crushers.
Crushers won again, of course. Joakim Neiman, as Neil would say, is 1 shot out of the playoff. Guy truly is one of the hottest golfers in the world, unlike Nick Hardy at this moment. Just some noteworthy performances as we get close to the majors. Bryson T6 this week, Rahm T8, DJ T21, Koepka 28th, Patrick Reed T29, and Phil finished T52 out of 54 guys this week. So. Don't think that means anything really, but just worth keeping an eye on. It's 6,700 yard course in Hong Kong. It was quite tight from what I understand. But
I still would love to see another Cam Smith major run at some point, be it a Masters or another British Open or whatever.
Win some tournaments.
Be good at golf again. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure.
I mean,
he's a great example of the worry of like, would you not be quite as driven or as motivated when you made a shit ton of money? And maybe he just was peaking at that right moment when he was the best player in the world in some ways, and now he's just kind of regressed to more what he is. But he hasn't really contended in anything since, right, that mattered, that you cared about. I know he won a live event at some point, he won down in Australia and some smaller thing, but like with a field of shit ton of people, like he just doesn't feel like he's a big threat. Maybe Augusta will be his, he's played well there several times.
Yeah.
Last year, he was T34 at the Masters. He was fourth at the U.S. Open, T33 at the Open Championship, T9 at the PGA. The U.S. Open was backdoor. He shot like a 63 on the final round or something to rise up it. But no, he was not his normal competitive self. He's fallen to 59th in the data golf rankings now. Just in his current like strokes gain profile does not look very good. In fact, it's below average professional golfer so far to this point this year, not factoring in this past week. So
where's SI rank him, or the Tugger rankings?
It was a tough week because they played such a short course. The SI rankings, that would have been a tough week to have done very well.
What a humiliating, I don't even think we shit on that enough when it came out. What a humiliating, just groveling, thirsty ass type of exercise that was. The distance per shot rankings. It was serious, with a serious publication with a straight face coming out with that, just hoping that you could drum up engagement from the live bots. You fucking losers.
I would love to see like some of these people that have so many problems with how all the rankings are done. I would love to see them just like sit down with, like, have you guys ever read? I hope not. I hope people don't read this. Like, read the data golf, the model for how they come up with like their strokes gain stuff, and like tell them that they're wrong. Like, give me a better way to do this than the way they're doing it, right? Like, there's all the shit you haven't even thought of, long term, short term, all this stuff is like, there's probably just a pretty decent estimate as to where you rank among professional golfers. Any other noteworthy performances? I have one other exercise for us tonight as we turn our eyes towards the players this coming week. What would your guys' questions, top questions, if you're Jay Monahan, if you're in the presser this week, maybe I will be. I will be, actually. And maybe I'll ask one of these. If you
Big Jay, really Solly, great to go.
What questions would you have for Jay Monahan this week?
So am I asking questions that I think are going to get any kind of answers, or am I doing that performative thing where I'm like, Mr. Monahan, how can you stand here and look us in the eye? Because, you know, I could go either way. I mean, I'll start.
I can start if you want, because I think this is a little bit of both. This one's a little bit performative and a little bit like kind of pins you down and you got to answer a question here. I would say you went on TV on June 6th with Yasser announcing the framework agreement. You, at the Dealbook Summit, you said that you clearly see a deal with the PIF happening. Are you still committed to working out an agreement with the PIF?
Yeah. That's kind of the billion-dollar question, I guess.
Like, if I ask, if you ask, like, all right, you know, what does competitive golf look like? You're going to get a swimming, like, you're not going to get a good answer, right? That's the trillion-dollar question, right? Is like, dude, tell me what the golf tournaments are going to look like. That's all we really actually care about in all this. But like, hey, are you doing a deal with PIF or not? Like, are you, like, is everyone going to come back together or not? Is like kind of the only thing that matters.
I think I would maybe ask what, like, I would have to think of the right way to frame this, but it's hard to speak out of both sides of your mouth when there's been so much of the legacy over leverage, the history of the PGA Tour is our biggest strength, all of those things. But like, almost like, how committed are you to unwinding some of that for what's best for the future of pro golf? Do you know what I mean? Like, basically how for or against the idea of like creating two different tours inside the PGA Tour would you be? Like, what do you think about a Stars Tour and a people trying to make the Stars Tour? You know, like, I think trying to like get a real answer from him on what kind of standing the Mules have now that you've kind of, you know, pivoted to a for-profit enterprise rather than the 501c6, like, you know, everyone is like membership organization, everyone has a voice. That would be a big would have to obviously come up with a more concise way to ask that, but some sort of like, how has the Mule's voice changed over the last year with this new PGA Tour Enterprises you know, announcement?
Would you put that in the category of expecting an answer on that one? Because I
mean, no, but yeah. Like, that's where all of this just becomes such a like performative thing, like you said, KBV in the first place.
I have three questions. Will you debate Phil Mickelson in an open forum with the winner getting $1 million to go into charity? I don't care. You can pick the venue. Maybe we do it on Rogan. Maybe we do it on NLU. Maybe we do it on Fairways to Heaven, whatever the fuck.
Debate him. Debate him. What do you guys lose?
Maybe. Debate him. Okay. Like, Phil's ready. Phil's been like warming up on Twitter for 2 years for this shit. So will you do it? If not, are you a coward? Two, in the seriousness, are you the right man for the job going forward and why? There are so many like big business issues. You are not a like business person. You've been a person who has like been good at sponsorship dollars and, you know, running the players, running tournaments or whatever. Isn't there someone, you're not going to get an answer to this, like some satisfaction, but it feels like worth asking. Isn't there someone who could show better like strategic leadership for the future going forward? And I forget my third one. I forgot it again. Sorry.
I was supposed to be great. One of them was going to be, what grade would you give yourself over the last 4 years?
Yeah.
That'd be an interesting answer.
That's tough. That's a tough one. I feel like some teachers have looked me in the eye and asked me similar questions to that. It doesn't feel great.
No. I mean, look, I do feel somewhat sympathetic to him because
you think he deserves an A?
I think he wants to do the right thing, but he's in a position where he's got so many different interests. I think, Solly, that he, if he was given truth serum, he would sort of say, dude, I'm in a spot where like I thought I had solved the issue. And then all these players were like, we're not fucking signing a deal with the PIF. Like, you told us this was a terrible idea and we believed you. We stood back. And now you got to basically figure out a way to get us paid. And we don't want these guys to come back and fuck all them. And so I think he probably was like, shit, like I'm just doing my best here. That's why he was so stressed out. That's why he was sort of dealing with, I felt like the walls are closing in. And so I think he's in an impossible spot now. He put himself in that spot in a lot of ways. But I think that's the sort of answer ultimately is like, yeah, dude, I don't know. You think you can convince like Patrick Cantlay and Jordan Spieth and Peter Malnati and Joe Ogilvy and Rory McIlroy and all these people to get along and to vote yes and to please, you know, give Yasser. I mean, what if the stupid sticking point is like Yasser still wants like Augusta membership? And Jay's like, I literally can't do this, man. Like they wouldn't give one to Bill Gates for whatever when he was the richest dude in the world. I can't give you that. And Yasser's like, that's my final offer. Like, that's what I want.
God, just give it to him, guys. Just give him the membership, and we can get back to golf life as usual.
What do you think the odds are that there's like a significant announcement during that press conference, or do you think it is just like deflect, 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 deflect?
I think they would have, if it was like an agreement with PIF, they would have, the PIF side would have leaked it to their friendly media people to sort of get out ahead of the narrative of like we're the winners, you know, at this point. So
yeah.
I don't even think it on that side of it. I think it like they're so obsessed with the players and the players standing and focusing on the players that like that would take it away from the event.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not expecting a lot to come
Canada again
to come from this. Other than like it just to be awkward and some probably pretty aggressive questions, I think.
I do have a question, Deez. You can answer this or you can plead the fifth, but I've always thought that from my experience being at two of the players' press conferences and then watching quite a few of them the last, 10, 15 years, that all the questions are very staged. Now, are there seated questions or are they actually
questions? I don't think they're seated questions. I think they're no. I think they're all above board.
Seems like there's quite a few like little layups.
There's a lot of local media there that are
Some of the local. Yeah.
But there's hard questions. I mean, there's people who care, I think, deeply. I mean, Doug Ferguson, the AP, covers and asks pointed questions. Bob Herrig asks pointed questions. Like, I think I asked two questions last year, and I think, you know, both of them sort of made him a little bit uncomfortable, or at least like felt like he had to come up with some better answer than deflection. I think. It's funny, like I think that the Tiger Woods press conferences are much more like at the Genesis. It's very much like, Tiger, you've been here for 25 years. Like, how much do you love coming to LA? And like, those are very much like staged bullshit questions. But I think at the players, like, you know, there's not a lot of like, super friendly. It's not like there's a lot of journalists and newspapers who are covering the golf beat anymore. So who's going to like the local guy's going to throw a little softball question out there?
I don't think there's that many. I don't know. It doesn't seem like that many media have like a great relationship with Jay either. I mean, very cordial relationship, but I don't think there's ever like a, hey man, like let's go out for some beers and I'll tell you what's really going on. You know,
he just
like,
doesn't want to do that. I mean, I actually saw him at the Genesis this year and we shook hands and talked and I kind of was like going to say like, you know, hey, would you like to just sit and chat for a minute? And he was like, oh, I got to go. Like, thanks so much, Kevin, for covering the
covering the game. Like, really appreciate it. I was like, oh, okay, it, well.
Yeah, and I mean, I think a lot of it is like, there's no surprises. Like, it's going to be all PIF stuff. It's going to be all guys are mad. It's going to be all money. It's going to be all designated events. Like, it's pretty easy to prep for, you know, like, quote unquote deflect. Media prep. I don't think there's going to be any curve, but like, oh shit, I didn't think you were going to ask me about PIF. Like, let me come up with something. Like, I think he's going to be polished and ready to go.
Certainly different narrative, though. Felt last year at this time like they had sort of quelled the thing. We had, you know, all these rumors that PIF was kind of losing interest a little bit, wasn't paying all their bills. Guys were interested in maybe coming back, so having lawyers look over their contracts, seeing if that was a possibility. And then I think Yasser just kind of was like, you know what, I'm going to get some more. I'm going to open up the faucet a little bit more. And we're going to really, you know, whether it was something pissed him off or, you know, MBS basically was like, do whatever you want. I don't care. The money is irrelevant at this point to us. So, because it definitely felt like they had, figured out a way to survive. And now it feels like they are on the operating table and the doctor's like, I don't know. Like, we might need to call this, guys. Like, it's not looking great.
You know what? This is, I see a great question in the comments from Phil Landis that I would actually like to second. Should we get to hear from Ed Hurley and Jimmy Dunn? Are those guys still saving pro golf? I will say that those guys tend to have taken quite a backseat after the barnstorming tour of the framework deal. And Ed Hurley, I don't even know that I've ever like seen his face. So I don't know what he even looks like. So just another kind of weird, you know, shields for Jay that don't seem to really be there anymore.
Maybe Jimmy's out trying to find the hijackers. He said he'd kill him himself.
He's on the hunt. Jimmy did also go to Senate and answer their questions when Jay couldn't go. So I'll at least put that one in Jimmy's.
No, at least they were out. Yeah, at least they were like answering questions, I guess.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It does seem weird that Jimmy was not involved in the most recent announcement. Where they were like, oh, the policy board is being remade and Joe Ogilvie is a part of it. And Tiger's got he's the vice president now. And Jimmy was not involved in that.
Yeah. There's a lot of player involvement in all that now. A lot more player stuff that doesn't necessarily make me feel rosier about the whole thing. But I don't know. That's for another day. Full Swing came out this week. We had a podcast. If you missed it, go back and check that out. Our most recent episode prior to this one, recapping it all. KV, you're not on that one. Just want to see if you had any overarching thoughts on Full Swing.
I haven't got a chance to watch it yet, so I'm kind of going to withhold a little bit other than to say I was right about Keegan and all of you were wrong.
I think we gave you some flowers on the Full Swing recap. You know,
I didn't know that. So.
Keegan was
this is news to me. I'm just learning.
I hope you feel better about yourself, though. Keegan rocketed up my rankings. He was quite low before, but now he is. You know,
he's on there.
Maybe knocking on the door of some signature events.
I get a lot of comments. Why don't the boys like Keegan? And I don't know. I never have a great explanation for it. I feel like maybe we need a reset between relations between NLU and Keegan. You know, it's just. Offer him to come on the pod, talk about the Patriots, you know, and tell us about grinding with Tom Brady, you know, the things of that nature. I'll lead the way.
This is always the hard part is like, oh, the stories we've heard, but you can't tell that nobody wants to hear that line. But it's like, dude, yeah, you've talked to enough people, you hear enough stuff, you're just kind of like, okay, yeah, I'm kind of good on this one.
And but you know what? I will say people sometimes act immature when they're younger and then they grow up a little bit, right? Like,
that's to be accurate.
That was my takeaway from Full Swing was like the very minimal, minuscule, small dealings that I've had with him, which are like borderline insignificant, you know, were when he was much, much, much younger. And now like watching him on camera, I'm like, God, that's like a different dude. Like, I think he seems like he's really matured. And, you know, I would love to hear a podcast with him. So I'm totally open-minded.
Let me put it this way. Anytime it ever came up on the pod and it was like, yeah, I don't really like Keegan, there'd be like two DMs the next morning like, oh, wait to hear this one. Oh, fuck. God. There's more. There's more there. There's more there. And that has cooled down over the years, I think. But there's something to that. And I would also say, I would also caution anyone just taking, you know, from a lot of conversations we've had with people in the last week, just since Full Swing came out, is like, you are watching a reality television show edit-wise. Like, it is a narrative that they are trying to tell you, and it is cut for this specific purpose to deliver this message. The whole thing in the show is JT versus Keegan, when in reality, JT was almost certainly going to be on the team, and Sam Burns got the last spot over Keegan. But that's not what it's presented in the series. But That's how drama works on television. So
I would also just enter into the evidence again, not that I like would know Keegan at all or he would know me. And a lot of it kind of stems from like, I just don't like his golf swing. Don't like all the pre-shot shit. I don't like, you know, sometimes you just don't like guys. That's kind of
spitting all over the place.
Yeah. You know, there's probably quarterbacks that you've never met that you just like, fuck that guy. You know, it's a pro sports TV show. That's kind of how I feel. Yeah, you know, I just don't like that team. I don't know how to tell. I don't know what to tell you.
Okay. Well, I'm going to remain on the pro Keegan block over here. We shouldn't be a monolith. We shouldn't have to have the same thoughts.
Of course.
Anything else before we wrap as we head into a week again? Like we said, we're going to have a lot of shows this coming week. I'm going to spend a lot of time out there at TPC this week. I'm really looking forward to it. I hope we get. Looks like we have good weather. Looks like maybe some rain potentially on the weekend, unfortunately, but going to be hot out there a little bit. And good. We need it. We needs to dry out a little bit because we've gotten a lot of rain, unfortunately. So
I want to click. I only have round one numbers here, but Live Golf Hong Kong round one on Caffeine TV up to 2 million views. So congrats to them. Unbelievable. Great. Unbelievable metrics. It's like when I report back to our partners and I'm like, yo, we got real numbers. And then you see other people in the podcast space that are just inflating the shit out of everything. I'm like, these guys, man.
Everywhere I go, people are talking about Caffeine TV, which I definitely knew existed before 2 weeks ago. I was always tuning in to Caffeine TV to get the latest caffeine fix.
Oscar's on Caffeine TV tonight, I think.
Just to give people just a semblance of how hard this is overblown is like there's like maybe like the daily active users on the actual Caffeine TV app is I don't even know if it's 10,000 people. Like it's so minuscule. Like it is such a wildly fake effort. Even like the bots aren't even pumping these numbers because because they know how ridiculous it sounds. Like, come on, guys, get it together.
That's the thing that's hard is just willing to lie so hard. Like I just Liv could have been gone a different direction and been a disruptor without just basically adopting all these tactics of just like being full of shit about so much stuff. Like
in their defense, it might be Caffeine TV lying really hard, really, really hard. Or it also could be a bot farm that's kind of giving all these cheap viewers or whatnot. But repeating the lie is all knowing it's a lie is also you know. A sin, if you will.
Just reminds me too much of Corncob TV from
I heard that a lot this week. I have not seen that, but I heard that a lot this week.
It's time to tell Spectrum no, we're not doing this with Liv.
It's not who we are.
Sorry, we got a busy week.
Very busy week. I'm trying to get out of here and these guys won't let me leave. It's like TC at the very end here. So this is it. Thank you everyone for tuning in. Like I said, we'll be back this coming week. Many, many shows. Send us all your questions, thoughts, anything you want to hear us chat about on the coming week. We'll gladly get to it because we got the time. Thank you to High Noon, Titleist, Roback, Mr. Cody, Mr. KBV, Mr. Pie Man, and everyone in the comments roasting us as always. Greatly appreciate it. So see you back here next week. Cheers.
Scotty's going to win by 5 this week again.
Probably.